Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
Nowadays, especially with social media, you know, it's everywhere. I mean, there's no hiding. You know, last couple years, you know, we've all gotten together as a team, and we've been on the road the last couple years, so we all kind of watch it the day of that deadline. And you know, it seems like your boys at TSN always have the inside scoop.
Well, here comes one of those boys, Drew Stafford, after the skate this morning. On the Irish Embassy pregame portion of Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690, prior to the Habs against Stafford and the Sabres with Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo, Mitch Melnick until 7 o'clock. He's with us every Tuesday and Thursday, normally after 6, from TSN and ESPN.com. Pierre LeBrun, how are you?
I'm all right.
Yes, you got Drew Stafford watching you guys especially this year, right?
He better watch this year. You might find out something that... it's close to home.
I want to ask you, since Josh Georges is playing for the first time against the Canadiens, he was hurt. He was in the building, but he was hurt last time they were here. I don't know if anybody has been able to absolutely 100% confirm it, Pierre, that the Canadiens traded Georges to the Leafs. We know. We believe it was for Cody Franzen if the trade had gone through. We don't know that for a fact.
Right.
And Georges nixed it, and so they ended up signing Tom Gilbert. So it's an interesting dynamic here with the Leafs trying to sign Franzen and running out of time.
Obviously, well, good luck on that, I'd say.
So they're going to trade him prior to March 2nd. Would the Canadiens be in it, or would they not be, since they went out and got Tom Gilbert?
Yeah, I mean, I have conflicting things here with Montreal and Franzen. And one is that, you know, I think they've liked him for a long time. Obviously, they tried to trade for him. So from that basis alone, someone told me a couple of days ago that they believe the Canadiens had interest, but someone else that I trust in terms of what's going on in that front office said that Mark Bergevin is going to be careful when it comes to rentals. And we know his philosophy, his long-term view, how careful he's been. And I'll tell you further to that, the lowering of the Canadian dollar and the uncertainty of the salary cap, not just for next year, but even for the years beyond that, if the dollar stays around 80, if not lower, I think Mark Bergevin's all over that line of thought, and I think he's going to be careful. He's already traded Travis Bowen and Renee Bork for those reasons alone. He was kind of ahead of the curve on his fellow GMs that way back in November. But, I'm going to be intrigued to see what he's going to do. I can tell you from talking to other teams that Bergevin has been very active in phoning around. And yet, the sense I get is that it's more just, it seems to be like he's just sort of trying to find out what's going on as opposed to really trying to zero in on a guy or two. In other words, if the time comes where there's something there, he wants to have been able to, you know, done the homework and understand what's out there.
And he doesn't appear to be the guy who will give up a first-round pick for almost anybody. At this stage.
I could not believe that he would do that. And you can play this clip over if it does, but that would shock me. Yeah, I don't know how Habs fans feel about it. I can tell you right now, I think he's doing the right thing. It's what GMs of Canadian teams should be doing, which is making sure that the long term is never lost. I mean, until the day that you feel you're literally one player away from getting over the hump to win a cup, then that's a different thing. But, the Canadiens are a contender, yes, but they're hardly one player away from being the best team in the league. And I think Mark Bergevin knows that, and I think the long-term view will be very important, as always, between now and March 2nd.
And another interesting dynamic, especially when it comes to a high-profile guy like Franzen, is, and we all want all these trades on deadline day, but with so many teams in the East already out of it, I would imagine that, okay, well, let me ask you the question. Are the Leafs going to take an offer prior to the deadline if they like it, or do they think they'd be better off by waiting until deadline day?
I think they're willing to start moving very soon here. I don't think they need to wait till March 2nd. I think if someone meets the price, like the price on Cody Franzen, and I wrote about this today in my Rumblings blog, but I think if someone can offer up a second rounder and a very good young player or a prospect, one or the other, sort of that two asset package, I think is yours. Now, they haven't completely given up on talking to Franzen about a contract. That you still have to sign off on that first. Now, they're very far apart. I mean, Franzen, what was communicated to Franzen late last week was that the Leafs could do somewhere around 4.4 or 4.5 million a year over 3 years. Well, there's no question that Franzen knows on July 1st there's a six-year deal waiting based on what Matt Niskanen got last year, and Matt Niskanen got 5.75. Now, maybe Franzen doesn't get as much because of the Canadian dollar and they're lower in cap, but no question he can get more term and more money than what the Leafs communicated last week. But will Toronto make a better offer between now and the next couple of weeks? Possible. But the sense I get is that both sides probably feel a divorce right now is the best course of action. Franzen, because this is the first time in his life he can hit UFA and take care of himself and his family. And the Leafs, because they're hardly in a position where they should be adding long-term deals to this roster. I mean, it's teardown time. And yes, Franzen's, he's only 26 or 27, so it's not like he's some old guy. And in fact, you could still build around a guy like that. He's a real good defenseman. But at the end of the day, enough with the 6-7 year deals with this organization. It's time to, it's time to start getting rid of those deals, not adding to them. And I think from that perspective, I think the Leafs, I'll defend them for just expressing a willingness to do 3 years last week. I think it's probably smart.
Yeah, I think he's one of the bright spots on this team. You look at him, and when you're going through a rebuilding and restocking your organization, some of the pieces you keep and you surround around, and Tyler Myers is one of those guys. You build your team around.
Sabres coach Ted Nolan talking about another big, young, right-handed defenseman in Tyler Myers, like Cody Franzen. The Red Wings apparently have been searching for a right-handed guy forever.
Right.
So here's one for you, and we can come back on March 3rd or 4th and talk about it. Who's going to end up trading more guys at the deadline, the Sabres or the Leafs?
Or the Coyotes,
yeah.
By the way. Or the Hurricanes, by the way. Yeah, I mean, all those teams are looking to move some bodies, no question about it. I think it'd be interesting to find out from Buffalo if Tim Murray ever feels like he overplayed his hand, for example, on Chris Stewart. There was a deal there in, I think, mid to late October or maybe early November with either Boston or Ottawa, I think, for Chris Stewart, and I think he wanted a bit more and never got done. And then Chris Stewart hasn't played very well. So will the offer be better on Chris Stewart closer to March 2nd than it was then? I guess we'll have to see and find out. Obviously Drew Stafford. I mean, you look at all the UFAs. When it comes to Tyler Myers, I've never sensed an appetite on the part of Tim Murray to move him. But because of where the franchise is, I've also sensed that he doesn't, he doesn't say no to the conversation. I mean, if teams are phoning for this kid, he's willing to listen. But certainly what my understanding is, the price is awfully, awfully steep to ever get Tyler Myers out of there, which is not to say it won't happen because I think there's a chance. But I think Tim Murray's looking for the home run on that one. Whereas I think with the other parts, they're going to be more standard deals.
So, Pierre, they already have 3 number ones and 3 number twos going into this year's draft. Presumably, they're going to add to that haul with the moves they make. Would that be the highest number of picks in the first 2 rounds any team has ever had?
Sorry, say that again?
Well, with 3 number ones and 3 number twos for the Sabres going into the draft with potentially more picks coming up, are you aware of a team that has had more early draft picks than Buffalo?
Yeah. I mean, we'd have to go back and look at all the Edmonton years, I guess. But I think as a grouping, it might be the most. I know in talking to Ted Black, I wrote that big Sabres piece a few weeks ago about the tanking and all the great work that's being done off the ice with Harbour Center and everything. And Ted Black on the record said to me that he's sure that it's the most picks that they will have had in that time span in the history of the Sabres in any case. And by the way, Tim Murray wants to add more picks, as you said, so they're not even done. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. And now here's a challenge for them, and frankly, it's a challenge for teams like Toronto too, who have a poor track record of this. It's not just drafting; it's developing. It's actually doing something with these players and making sure that they come up the right way. I mean, people always talk about how the Red Wings draft so well. That's only half the equation. What the Red Wings do actually better than anyone else is develop players, is make them develop in Grand Rapids and spend a couple of years in the AHL, and they don't rush anyone. That's, if you're really looking for the model, it's not just drafting well. It's actually what you're doing with them after you bring them into your organization. And That is still an area where so many teams roster players way too. I mean, it is ridiculous that Leon Draisaitl originally made the Oilers this year. I mean, honest, come on. What was the point of that? And I don't think that was good for his development whatsoever. And there are other examples, including Morgan Riley staying last year here in Toronto. I don't think that was a good idea either. What is the rush? Why not let these guys develop at their own pace?
With Pierre LeBrun of TSN, ESPN.com, Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. It's the Irish Embassy pregame show. Habs and Sabres coming up. We'll turn things over to Connor McKenna at 6, Knuckles Nylund at 6:30. As you're talking about stockpiling draft choices, my impressionable 15-year-old mind at the time remembers following Sam Pollock and the Montreal Canadiens in the 1974 draft, Pierre. They had 5 first-round picks and 3 more in the second. They had 8 picks in 2 rounds. And as a result of that, they got Doug Risebrow and Mario Tremblay and Rick Chartrand and guys who helped them win 4 straight Stanley Cups. It's amazing. Yeah. Just amazing. We were so spoiled. But
people caught on to that whole drafting after a while. It brings me to one of my great young moments in my career when I was, well, not great because there's not a lot of great moments in my career, but when I was young, just starting out here in Toronto, Cliff Fletcher had traded for Matthew Schneider, I think it was. Cliff Fletcher was GM of the Leafs. And I asked him about giving up yet another first-round pick, and the Leafs are trying to hang in there as a contender under Pat Burns. And Cliff famously turned to me and said, "Draft Schmaft," which was the headline in the Toronto Sun the next day.
Kind of like George Allen in the NFL, right? The future is now. You just threw out a name that I talked about with Rod prior to the show. I read a quote from Matthew Schneider with the NHLPA today.
Mm-hmm.
That he's not open to this possibility of 3-on-3 overtime because he's worried about the, quote, wear and tear, unquote, of players having to have another shift or two.
Yeah, well, I would suggest to you that I think Schneider will probably have to talk to more of his players because a lot of the star players I've talked to like the idea. So, I mean, certainly Schneider's voice is important because he has a voice on the competition committee. You know, so when it comes time after the GM meetings for the competition committee to look at what the GMs recommend, and I suspect 3-on-3 will get a hard look in Boca Raton at the GM meetings in March, no question Schneider's voice is important, but I would suggest that he needs to make sure he talks to more of his players because I think a lot of the players I've talked to love the idea of ending the game in a more natural hockey fashion.
Good to hear. Before we let you go.
The photograph that ended up online was doing a delightful tequila shot was at Tim's behest. He encouraged me to post it. And then the following morning, when it became apparent that that people had taken notice, he encouraged me to write a story. I was kind of on the fence about writing a story about it. I'm not someone who necessarily wants to put myself in the middle of a news story like that, as I am today.
There is Greg Wyshynski of Puck Daddy fame with Tony Marinaro on the Montreal Forum earlier today. Really interesting development. The shot he was talking about, Tim Peel on his blog, at Foley's Pub, which Gallo, I brought you into when the Canadiens and Rangers were going at it. And that is a pub that is free. It's a great spot frequented by a lot of Major League Baseball umpires and National Hockey League refs. They hang out there, and Wyshynski and Tim Peel were doing a tequila shot. The NHL wasn't too pleased. I don't know what they weren't pleased about. Particularly, they yanked him off an assignment that night. He went back to work, and now everything's fine, apparently. But what's intriguing to me about this is that he kind of expressed what I think we all kind of know is an unwritten rule, that referees may actually officiate depending on what the score is.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't read the story. I heard about it. Is that what he said? I tell you one thing. I've had a beer with Tim Peel at a bar. Does that put me in trouble? I've had a lot of beers with refs at bars, but I don't usually write about it.
Yeah. Well, apparently Peel was, well, he wanted to, because Wyshynski and a lot of people, especially here in Montreal, it's like Tim Peel and Chris Lee are the guys that get whacked a lot. But he wanted to, he wanted to try to state his case, to make a case,
right,
and have a dialogue with the guy. But in the meantime, Peel admits it was a call he wouldn't have made in a 1-1 game and wouldn't have made without knowing that the NHL wants this penalty for the sake of quote-unquote game management in order to ensure a 4-0 game between two rivals doesn't get out of hand. He was talking about a penalty on Alexander Ovechkin the night before. So, I mean, we all understand, like, for example, on Saturday here in Montreal, the final power play totals for both teams were 2-2. And there wasn't going to be a penalty called in the third period based on the way that Mike Lego was working the game. So do you think that's what they were upset about, or the fact that Tim Peel spoke to this to Greg Wyshynski?
I'm guessing. I haven't looked into the story at all. I've had other things to follow today, but I'm guessing that taking a shot with a media member and having it published is probably not the best of things.
Rod?
Well, I find it also silly. This was supposed to be a piece that was humanizing Tim Peel, that was allowing him to tell his side of the story, and the league comes down harshly on one of their referees because he had the audacity to grant an interview, presumably without clearing it with them.
Well, that's the thing. We know what the arrangement is.
Right, but that's a shame that is now the focus instead of this should be a nice narrative about Tim Peel, the guy, explaining himself instead of the league's heavy-handed tactics.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think that he let the cat out of the bag, which something anybody who follows hockey knows exists, but to actually see it in print is, Stephen Walkham, and I'm sure the league is not too thrilled. But that's the end of that. Pierre, would you like to add anything, or...
No, I think you guys have nailed it. Okay. I think I should just listen to the show.
all right. So I noticed as we were talking on the monitor here on Insider Trading that you did tonight with Bob McKenzie and Darren Drager and James Duthie. Mm-hmm. Back from the Super Bowl, James Duthie. Did he have a good time?
Yeah, it was work. It wasn't all play.
Yeah. That there was a lot of percentages up there on Leaf players moving. So let me ask you, since you're doing the Montreal Canadiens pregame show at the moment, the percentage in your own mind that Marc Bergevin makes a significant move prior to the deadline like he did a year ago?
I would say 60%.
60. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one. 60.
All right.
All right.
And I can defend that percentage no matter what happens. That's what I love about it.
It's kind of like there's a 60% chance of showers.
I mean, listen, like I said, I can tell from talking to other teams that Bergevin has been really structured in the way he's approached a lot of people to find out what it would take, who's out there, so that when it's time to circle back in crunch time, he's ready. Now, whether or not he does anything, he may not, but at least he knows what's there and he knows what he's willing to give up.
Talk to you on Thursday. Thanks as always, Pierre.
All right. See ya.
Melnick in the afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.